This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
And welcome to our Lifetime Income series, which airs every Monday here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Jim, over the weekend on the record, we were talking about interest rates and some other issues. You know, we've done series on looking for yields when interest rates are so low. And what do you do when interest rates are near zero? They've been there for about 5 years. We know that the Fed indicates they're probably going to be there through 2014, 2015, somewhere in there. And a lot of baby boomers are getting just an itty-bitty little antsy about what this is going to mean for their retirement, and you can't blame them, because I remember when my father retired, interest rates were just super-duper, and when he passed away, he left my mother a series of good monetary instruments that were getting good yields for a long time, and you could count on that. Now you can't, so what do you do now?
Well, you're right about the uncertainty related to retirement, John. And just as, you know, when your father passed on, you know, I suspect interest rates were in the high single digits or even double digits. And those were pretty predictable. In other words, we had normalized interest rates for quite some time. Interest rates have now been at zero for the last 5 years. In addition, we now have quantitative easing. And John, this isn't just a U.S. issue, it's a global issue. I'm looking at a Bloomberg screen right now, and this will just give you an idea where yields are. You know, U.S. Treasury yields on a 10-year note are at 1.9%. If you went over to Europe, the U.K. yields are at 2%. Germany's at 1.5%. Switzerland is at 0.5%. If you wanted to get anything decent, what we used to get maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I mean 5 years ago, you got 5% on a 2-year treasury note. You'd have to go and buy 10-year Spanish bonds or Portuguese bonds or Greek bonds, which have bumped up in the last week. But outside of that, John, global sovereign yields have all come down. All markets are interconnected today, so it's not just that the Fed is using quantitative easing to suppress interest rates and keep them artificially low. The UK is doing it. The ECB is doing it. Japan has been doing it. They've been doing it for quite a long time. But I would have to say this, it's a lot harder today to put together an income portfolio than it was, let's say, 10 years ago, or let's say when your dad was living. But I guess the good news, it's still possible to do that if you have a plan and know where to look. And that's very important.
As you talk about that, I keep thinking about what I always used to do when I was planning things. I'd always take the best case scenario. I don't know why. Maybe I was looking at rosy outcomes, and I found out that wasn't a very good thing to do. Yeah, you should plan for maybe average or even under average, like a worst case scenario, and see what you'd have to do to survive in that case. But if we look at interest rates where they are, what would a realistic expectation be in terms of income? Because you, as well as I know, whether it's housing market or anywhere, everyone keeps wanting it to go back to, quote, the good old days. And you have to work in the reality of where we are.
Well, that depends on, John, like anything else in life. It depends what your risk level is. You know, obviously, the less risk that you're able to handle, the lower your yield's going to be. I mean, if I just take a look at CD rates right now, you know, 1-year CD rates are at about 1%, and we know inflation's running at 2%. So if you want absolute safety, John, you're going to get a rate of return that's negative, meaning that the rate of return you receive is actually less than the inflation rate. I mean, a 1-year treasury bill is 13 basis points. Think of that as 0.1%. A 1-year CD is 1%. 2-year treasury notes are at less than 0.25%. But I think a more reasonable expectation in this kind of environment, I think a 3-4% return is certainly a possible outcome for an individual. And when you think of retiring, given a high probability that you and your spouse, let's say between the two of you, can live maybe 25 years, that's the rate of return you should really try to strive for, is that 4% income return. This is the minimum, John, that you want to get if you don't want to get into a situation where you actually outlive your assets.
Well, is it possible to actually get returns greater than that? And if you're going to do that, then obviously there's probably going to be some kind of risk involved. Remember when Treasury bills had a really good yield a couple of decades ago? People like that. CDs are guaranteed by the government. There's a feeling of security in that, which I guess for a while is going to last out here. But how much risk is involved if you're going elsewhere?
Well, I mean, if you want to get a 6-10% return safely, the only way you're going to do that, John, is through an immediate annuity, because that is a predictable income stream that's going to come to you every single month. It's guaranteed by a highly rated insurance company. I mean, that's safe. That's guaranteed. But that's what you're going to have to do if you want to get those kind of returns safely. And remember, when you do an immediate annuity, in essence, you are getting part of your capital back. Now, that may be a solution for part of a person's income needs during retirement. And I want to talk about this and emphasize this. If it is combined with other type investment assets, such as a blue chip dividend paying stock, I mean, there are some annuities out there where you have a backout clause where you can take out part of your income or get part of your principal, let's say if you change in 5 years. But usually when you go into an immediate annuity, what they basically do, it's like a pension plan. They're going to take your life or your life and that of your spouse. They're going to take your longevity and they're going to say, based on this amount of capital, we are going to guarantee you X amount of dollars every single month for as long as you or your wife live. Now, you can do that safely, but you don't want to put all your assets into annuity, because then you're going to have no inflation protection. And then what if interest rates start to go up down the road, inflation runs higher? What are you going to do to protect yourself? But if you want to get a safe return in that neighborhood, 6-10%, it's possible, but you're going to have to go to something called an immediate annuity. It's very equivalent to, John, what happens to state government workers or individuals that work in corporate life, that they retire and they get X amount of dollars as a pension each year that the company guarantees. Basically, what they're doing is they're taking an amount of capital that has been set aside and buying an annuity for that couple or that individual that will take care of them during their retirement years.
Well, is it really possible to get returns greater than 4%? I know a lot of times when you and Rob Bernard discuss things, you're talking about hybrid bonds or preferred stock or utilities even. But is it realistic to say you're going to do that?
It's interesting that you asked this question, because the front cover of Barron's this latest week was addressing this exact question. It was called Income Winners. It's by Andrew Berry. And I'm just taking here from the title of the report. It's called, in today's low interest rate world, there are still ways to earn 6% or more on your money without taking on a lot of risk. Why blue chip stocks, utilities, and MLPs look like good bets? The article was basically addressing the very issue, John, that we're discussing here on the program today, which is income. And if I can summarize the Barron's article, it kind of looks like this. And once again, it depends on, you know, what your personal situation is, what's your tax bracket. But if you look at municipal bonds, the yields on a municipal bond range from 2-3%. And of course, in a high tax environment, that's probably equivalent to a 5-6% return pre-tax. If you look in the utility area in real estate investment trusts, it's certainly possible to get dividend yields of 4% or more. And more importantly, John, those dividends are going up each year, which is another important element about that 4% return. We often talk about dividend paying stocks here on the program. I mean, if I just take a look at the Dow stocks, I mean, you think of the big blue chip 30 stocks, you know, the Procter & Gamble's, the Exxon Mobil's, even the Dow today is paying 2.6%, and there are at least 10 stocks or more in the Dow that are offering investment returns or income returns that range from 3 to 5%. I think we talked a little bit about that on the first program of the year when we talked about the dogs of the Dow. So dividend stocks, 3, 4% or more. Master limited partnerships, which Rob talked about on the program last week. And Barron's talks about returns of anywhere from 4 to 6%. And, of course, preferred stocks. Preferred stocks, you can get convertible preferreds in the 4% range. You can get preferred stocks in the 5.5% and 6% range. So those 6% is getting a little bit harder, but certainly well in the 4 and 5% range. So, John, there's a variety of places that you can get yields out there. And what you see happen so many times is people say, oh, 6%, that sounds so good. Let's put everything into that. You don't want to do that. You want a diversified portfolio. You don't want to have everything in fixed income, just like you don't want to have everything in stocks. And you don't want to have everything in cash. In fact, cash is probably the worst place to be for the last 5 years.
Yeah, but here comes the, I guess, the contradiction here. You're talking about the stock market, but where everybody's flowing right now seems to be government bonds. And that was part of something we discussed over the weekend, where after one shock comes along, people huddle in the dark in a corner, fearful of coming out, and then make the next wrong decision.
Well, you know, sovereign bonds, John, I don't think that's the play that you want to be. Let's take a very popular ETF, TLT, which is 20-year treasury bonds. I mean, the yield's 2.7%. It's fixed. And TLT is down almost 2% for the year because bond yields have ticked up. Why would I want to take a risk of getting 2.7%, which can be diluted? In the last year, the yield on TLT has dropped by almost 20%, not to mention the fact that that yield has been dropping at over 5% a year for the last 5 years. And now, you know, you're already in negative territory for the year. So I think that's going to be very difficult to do with sovereign bond yields, which are now at close to century lows. I mean, unless you want to speculate, I mentioned earlier, you'd have to probably go to pig country debt. I mean, do you really want to risk buying Italian bonds, Greek government bonds for 5 or 6%? I mean, that is an area, I would say, for the big boys. I mean, like hedge funds, which, you know, made a lot of money in that area last year. But then again, it's all about timing. You talk about one of the big scandals last year at the beginning of the year was the bankruptcy of MF Global with John Corzine, who made a big bet, a leveraged bet on pig country debt. He was right. Eventually, it played out at the end of the year. Corzine's problem is he used clients' money, and he also leveraged the portfolio. And unfortunately, he went bankrupt and in the process, losing big money for MF Global investors.
Yeah, but even if it is possible to get greater than 4% returns, there's the whole issue of having to sleep at night. And I would suspect you would tell your listeners not to put everything that they do in one basket. That's just common sense.
You know, John, I would say you just touched upon an issue that concerns me the most today. And you see this all the time. You see investors putting all their eggs in one basket. I don't care if it was piling into the technology sector in the latter part of the 90s. Even fund managers did that, or real estate in the last decade, or what investors are doing now. They're putting all their money in the bond market. Even worse, they're going into bond funds. We just talked about TLT is already down 2% for the year. You know, if you're going to be in bonds, at least do yourself a favor, as we have talked so many times on this program. Put a laddered bond portfolio together, which is, you know, what we recommend using. You know, what I see, John, it just reminds me investors are going from one frying pan to the next. It was like technology stocks in the 90s. Then it was, I can't lose money in real estate in the last decade. And now, after losing money in technology and real estate in the last decade, they're pouring literally trillions of dollars into bond funds to their own detriment, at least. You know, with the laddered bond portfolio, which is what we advocate and what we do for our own clients, not only are you not going to get diluted? I just mentioned TLT, the ETF, dropped its dividend by 20% in the last 12 months. But more importantly, you're going to protect your principal. You're going to know what your bonds are going to pay you when they mature. In other words, buy a $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 bond, matures in 5 years, 10 years. I know I'm going to get that $100,000 back. More importantly, I know exactly what my income is. If I get a 4% bond, a 5% bond, I put $100,000, I know I'm going to get $5,000 each year. You're not going to have those kind of guarantees with the bond funds. And furthermore, what happens if interest rates start to rise, as we've seen in the beginning of this year, and we saw a good part of the last quarter of last year, investors lost money, John. And furthermore, if interest rates begin to rise, you're not going to have any inflation protection. And that's something that you just don't get with a bond fund. So do yourself a favor. Everybody knows the old adage, diversification. Or the other adage, put all your eggs in one basket and watch it closely. Most people, John, are not that sophisticated and don't watch their portfolios that closely that they can put all their money into a bond fund and then time out of it just before the bond market flips and starts to go in the opposite direction.
Let's lightning rod this if we could and bring it down to earth here. If you were putting together an income portfolio for a client, say he's right at the point of retiring, or maybe going to retire in the next 24, 48 months. Let's put one together.
I'm glad you asked that, because this is a very, very important question. And John, you know, this is what we talk about during this segment, Lifetime Income. It begins with putting together a plan. It's amazing. They've done a number of statistics, and I think we've cited them over time on this program. But about 60 to 70% of people heading into retirement have no retirement plan whatsoever. It's kind of like que sera, sera. You know, it's whatever it'll be, will be. And, you know, when we take a look at putting together a portfolio or putting together an income program, you know, we want to know a number of things. We're going to look at a person's budget. Why is that important? Because I need to know what it takes that person to live. What is their number? What is the amount of income that they need to receive to live comfortably and do the things that they want to do in retirement? The second thing I need to take a look at, what are their sources of income? Do they have, for example, a pension from the government or from a company? What are their Social Security payments? Is there both Social Security for the husband and wife? In other words, did the wife work as well? What size or amount of assets are available for investing? You know, we want to know what the risk profile is. And importantly, what are their estate plan goals? We want to look also, in addition to this, contingency plans. For example, a surviving income for a surviving spouse, because you can lose part of your income. Maybe annuity is reduced, a pension is reduced. You're going to lose one Social Security. I was counseling an individual just recently on taking early Social Security, and I said, don't do that. Her husband is in very, very poor health. She worked part-time, so her Social Security is not as large as her husband's if she was to take it early at age 62. And her husband is in failing health, and I said, don't do that. Don't take yours, because then you have the option of taking your husband's Social Security, which is larger than your own. So these are the kind of issues, addressing contingencies, medical issues. All of these things add up, John, and if you don't address them, you know what's going to happen? I can guarantee you this. Something is going to happen. Something out of the blue, something you don't expect, a health issue, a downturn in the market, and it's going to come back to bite you. In addition, let me throw the opposite side of this. At least if you have a plan and have addressed these issues, you're going to be less likely to panic when an unexpected takes place and you do something, John, or react that you'll regret later on. I mean, think of the number of investors who got out of stocks in the spring or summer of 2009 when everything was real scary, looked like the world was coming to an end. You know, it's hard to believe, as you and I are speaking on this day, the S&P is up 120% from the March 2000 lows. And I've seen investors, John, do some of the most irrational things over the last 5 years. And the reason they didn't have a plan, or they didn't have someone to hold their hand and at least reason with them before they jump out the window.
I know when you're talking as you just were, I was thinking of some family members who did exactly what you were talking about. If we go back to some of the real world case studies that we did, what we do is we have real client cases, but we change their names so you don't know who they are. In one case, we had Bill and Jan Smith. That was one of the earliest ones that we did here. And if you remember, Jan was a retiring teacher. She was only going to get 2/3 of her salary and her pension. Bill had, I think her husband was a little older, as I recall, had heart disease, and he took a lump sum payment out of his company and rolled it into an IRA in 2006, but he lost $150,000, sold at the bottom, which a lot of people did, and then huddled in cash for a long time.
It's interesting because that case study brought up a lot of the issues that we've been speaking in this segment. When Bill retired, he retired in 2006, and he's 8 years older than his wife, Jan. He had an $800,000 lump sum payment, rolled it over into an IRA. Now, you got to remember, back in 2006, where we were, the real estate market was booming. You could get pretty decent returns of 5 or 6%. The market was going up. And then along came 2007, 2008, and 2009. And all of a sudden, things weren't looking as great. I mean, even 2007, the market peaked in October. I mean, the real damage came in the latter part of the fall of 2008, between the fall of 2008 and probably the spring of 2009. And he panicked, rolled the money in cash, and basically stayed there. The issue when they came to see us was his wife, Jan, who had a salary of roughly around $80,000 based on her years of service teaching, she was only going to get 2/3 of that. So as long as Jan was working, they could pretty much live off Bill's Social Security and Jan's income, basically her paycheck as a teacher. But all of a sudden, Jan's salary was going to be reduced by over a third. So we had a number of issues. One, a reduction of income as a result of Jan heading into retirement. Number two, we had the issue of Bill, whose IRA had been basically sitting in cash because he was very, very fearful, saying, you know, what am I going to do? And remember, John, we've been on dire doom predictions, as we discussed on the weekend show, for every single year. It's no secret they're predicting the same thing for this year. All hell's going to break loose. And, you know, the doomsters and a lot of people have been prophesying doom for the last decade, and especially the last 4 years. So we had to deal with a number of issues. In this case, what we did is we took part of Jan's 403b plan, and we rolled it over into an immediate annuity that made up the difference in the loss of income between her pension and her salary. Now, we got close to a 10% return. We used about 2/3 of her 403b. And the reason we did that is a number of reasons. Number one, by basing it in her life, the income stream was much larger than if it was a joint annuity. And we did a 10-year certain just in case something happened to Jan during a 10-year period. But by doing that, John, we got close to a 10% return. We made up the shortfall between what Jan was getting as a salary teaching and what she was getting at a pension. So that's how we made up that gap. The other issue we had to deal with was Bill. And Bill was shell-shocked from what happened to him in 2008 and 2009. And he had about $650,000. And what we did, John, to create a little stability because he was fearful, and it worked out very well, is we put about $500,000 of that into bonds. And we did a laddered bond portfolio that was getting close to 5%. And then we took the other $150,000 and we put it into blue chip stocks that were paying dividends at 3%. Now, fortunately, when we did this, and we got to think back of what the market was like. Remember last May in 2012, the stock market was up going into the first week of May, and then it rolled over in a one-month period of time. We virtually gave back all the gains. And I can remember the call I got from the Smiths, and it was Bill. He was panicking. And I said, Bill, let's take a look at this. The pension that your wife is getting is coming in. That's not going to change. The annuity that your wife is getting, that's not going to change. The $500,000 that you have in bonds, that's not going to change. You know what? You own stocks like Exxon, Johnson & Johnson, a lot of high-quality stocks. You know, if they can make it through the Great Depression, I don't think you need to worry about this. In fact, it just so happened that month, I told them about it, there were several companies that had raised dividends. And fortunately, the stock market turned around in the summer, John, and we had one of the best runs going into September that we've had in nearly a decade. But you had to remind Bill, I said, Bill, let's think about this. Your income is not going to change from your bond portfolio. Your income is not going to change from Jan's annuity. The dividends that you're getting from these companies are not going to change. Yes, the stock market is going down right now, but it can come back. In fact, while this is taking place, two of the companies that you own in your portfolio announced dividend hikes during this period of time. And so, you know, John, because we had a plan, it was a lot easier for Bill to react to what was going on in the market. And, you know, it was funny, towards the end of the year when they make their annual gifts for their grandchildren's college fund, remember, the market was dipping during that period of time because everybody was all caught up in the fiscal cliff where we were going to go off the cliff. And you remember what it was like for the month of December every single night. That's all you heard about. When they called, they weren't as worried. It wasn't a worry call, because he felt comfortable about it, plus the fact that I'd sent out a newsletter in the month of November that alerted clients that, hey, we're going to dip here. There's a little nervousness. Hang on. We're probably close to bottom, which is what happened. And at the last minute, they'll solve this issue, and it's more of a contrived issue, and that's what happened. But here, John, is an example of we took needs for income, security for the wife, security for the individual, and through a combination of different investment assets, we put together a portfolio that addressed all those needs. But more importantly, we had a plan. We had a contingency. And so that, you know, when you sit there and have a conversation and basically tell somebody that, you know, almost 70% of their income is unaffected by anything that was going on in the market, and furthermore, their income wasn't impacted on the other 30%, they can react more rationally rather than jumping out the window or jumping off a cliff, as so many investors have done.
And coming up next here on Lifetime Income, we'll have a conversation with Yolanda York and everything you need to know about Medicare and changes which may be upcoming as Lifetime Income continues right here at FinancialSense.com.
Excited about this. We had such a positive response, Yolanda. Last time you were on the program, you told people a lot of things they just simply didn't know about. I mean, nobody knew that if you wait to your full retirement age at 66, you could continue to work and not get penalized. That was a shocker, I think, to a lot of people.
You know, and there is so much more, Jim, about Social Security. And Monday, we started something super exciting. I'm very excited about it, so I want to share it with your audience as well.
Okay. Well, Yolanda, let's begin with Medicare. And what I'd like to do is if you can share with our listeners, what are the important changes that go into effect in 2013? Can you share that with us?
So this year, 2013, what happens with Medicare? Well, obviously, the Medicare premium went very low. The premium for Medicare Part B is up to $104.90. The Medicare Part B pays 80% of your doctor bills. So it was 99, it's now 104.90. It's not a whole lot. I think most people know that we take that premium right out of your Social Security check if you are receiving one. If you happen to be one of the folks that is still working and only signed up for the Medicare, we will bill you quarterly, if you're not receiving a cash benefit.
Okay.
That's what's new. It's the new premium with Medicare. And the fact that you can also apply for Medicare online, most people thought they had to go to their local Social Security office. You can apply online at socialsecurity.gov, and they will take you exactly 12 minutes to file your application for Medicare online.
Wow, that certainly beats going down to the office, getting an appointment, and waiting in line.
Exactly. You know what, Jim, and I always say this, it's kind of like going like to Disneyland. You know, sometimes you have to wait a long time in line to get to that awesome ride.
Oh, sure.
And then you get this like 2-minute ride. Well, Social Security is the same thing. Now you can just save all that trip, not have to pay parking, struggle with the parking, and just do it out of the comfort of your home. In most cases, if you're born in this country, we have your birth certificate, so you don't even have to show your birth certificate because we can already get that document from vital records. If you're born outside the country, of course, you do have to show proof of citizenship and proof of birth.
Yolanda, I want to go back to the premiums on Medicare. It's gone from $99 to and 90 cents to $104.90 for this year.
Yes.
But also, I believe there were some changes that were put into effect somewhere around 2010. Correct me if I'm wrong on that date. For individuals with higher income, for example, last year, depending on your income, the premiums would start to rise and could get as high as $159.80 and $219.80. Can you tell me, have those premiums risen as well this year?
Yes, they have. So for people who are on Medicare Part B, and if you are in a certain income category, you will pay a higher income, you will pay a higher premium for the Medicare Part B. So that means the amount that it went up to, it's between $42 more to $230.80 more a month, depending on your income. So, for example, the person who has an income of, let's say a married couple with an income up to $428,000 a year, that's the adjusted gross income, they would be paying $353 a month instead of $104.
What about a married couple underneath that $428,000? I think there's a level that it begins to start rising. Isn't it somewhere in the $300,000 range or somewhere close to that?
Yeah, so there's different levels. So I have, for example, if you are between $170,000 to $214,000 adjusted gross income, then your premium, and all of this information, just so everybody knows, it's on the Medicare.gov website, okay? So all the new premiums are actually listed with them. Social Security hasn't, as of right now, we haven't updated the premiums to our Social Security website, but Medicare does have all the new premiums. So for a couple that was paying $99.90 a month, if they fall into this category between $170,000 to $214,000, I don't have the exact amount, but it would be something like maybe $158 monthly premium.
Okay, I've got the sheet in front of me. It's $159.80.
Oh, okay, very good.
I want to move on to something else. Okay, at age 65, let's say you're retired, you're expected to enroll in Medicare. Let's talk about, let's say I'm age 65, and I think, Yolanda, I have somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 months to do that, if I'm correct?
Yes, we always tell everyone, please file 3 months before you're going to be turning of that age to apply for the benefits.
And let's say, I don't know, I'm deciding, I don't know if I want Medicare, maybe I just don't get around to it, I procrastinate, or just say I'm so excited to be retired, you know, I travel, I'm playing golf, and this slips my mind. If I go beyond a waiting period, isn't there a penalty? Let's talk about that. That if you postpone registering when you're supposed to, let's say I don't register at age 65, I get around to it when I'm age 66 or 67. I'm retired, but you know what? I've got other plans. What happens?
That's a very good thing to bring up. There will be a 10% penalty for every year that you should have been on Medicare and did not apply. So if you're 67 and the premium was $104, now you have to pay an extra 20% on top of that $104.
And once you enroll, does it go back to normal or is that permanent?
That's a permanent penalty that stays. So let's talk about the individual who does retire at 65 and they didn't apply.
Okay.
So when they realize they have to apply, there's only now one general enrollment period, which happens to be right now between January and March 31st is when they have to come into Social Security and apply for the Medicare Part B. They can actually also do it online, but now if you didn't take it at 65, there will be that 10% penalty for every year that you delayed. Unless you happen to be in a situation where, let's say, yes, you did retire, but maybe your spouse is still working and your spouse has health insurance for you under their employer, then no penalty would apply. And you could technically not get Medicare or not apply for the Medicare Part B until your employer terminates their employment. So if by now you happen to be 70 and your spouse just retired, what we need to have is a letter from their employer stating that you were under health insurance from age 65 to the present, and we will enroll you on Medicare without a penalty and without a gap.
Yolanda, this is a very important point because we've seen so many couples today where you have a two-income couple where husband and wife are both working. And depending on who you're working for, you can be working for the state, you can be working for example, I have a client who works for a defense contractor who is in his 60s. He's passed, because of his expertise, he's passed age 65. His wife is retired in age 65, but his medical plan at the defense contractor is so great that they like that plan and they're continuing with that. So what you're telling me is between a husband and wife, and we should clarify this for our listeners, if at age 65 one spouse is still working with a good medical coverage, you don't have to apply and would not get penalized if you didn't. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, because, you know, it would make no sense to pay the premium. Let's say your spouse is paying a premium for your health insurance and then you're paying the Medicare Part B also. There's no need for that. So yes, you can save that portion, but it's very, very important to know that when that spouse terminates employment, and I would tell you, the week they terminate employment, let Social Security know. And for this, you will need to come into the office because we need to have a letter from the employer that states they covered this family unit from 65 to whatever age the person that should have been on Medicare.
All right, let's move on to something else, and that is, let's assume I'm retired. I have now applied for Medicare, and we are now on the Medicare system. So I've done it in time. I'm not getting penalized. But we know, Yolanda, that Medicare doesn't cover everything. Let's talk about the importance of having what we call supplemental insurance. In other words, an insurance policy, medical insurance policy, which I see with a lot of people on Medicare, that picks up the gap between what Medicare pays and maybe what a particular procedure, operation, drugs, or other things that a person may require.
So that's what we call Part C. And what it does is, let's say, for example, you're picking up an HMO. That's what we're talking about, correct?
Okay.
A secondary insurance?
Sure.
So a secondary insurance will definitely pick up your 20% copay that you would have paid to Medicare. They would then pick up that portion that Medicare doesn't cover. So now you're going to have the Medicare Part B. You pay that premium. It's taken out of your check. But if, let's say, for example, you happen to have Blue Cross or Kaiser, they're also going to request the premium, and you pay that directly to them. So when you go to the clinic, you are locked into that HMO, and you're paying only your office visit copayment, and that's probably where it ends.
So let's just give an example. Let's say there's a minor medical procedure that costs $5,000. Medicare is going to pick up, let's say, 80% of that, which is $4,000. So the $1,000 that Medicare doesn't pick up, that's what this other kind of supplemental insurance would pick up the cost, correct?
Right. That's Part C. That's called Medicare Advantage, which is, you know, there's lots of plans that you can select, and that's exactly what they would do. They would pick up the difference.
And let's talk about other aspects of Medicare. And this is one that I think confuses a lot of seniors, and that's long-term care, because there is a portion of long-term care that's covered to a limit depending on procedure. Let's say, Yolanda, somebody goes into a hospital, has bypass surgery or a stroke or something, and then they, let's say in the recovery process, coming from the hospital, they go to some long-term care facility where they're going to go through rehab or somebody's going to monitor and watch them. Let's talk about that long-term care portion that Medicare covers. I've had people say, well, I don't have a long-term care policy because Medicare covers all that. That's not necessarily true.
You know, that's true. Medicare, they will pay the deductible, which is, I'm not sure the number, but it's up to $1,000, maybe $100. That's an annual deductible. But then to pick up the difference, that's something where the individual really needs to contact Medicare directly about what it pays, what it doesn't pay, because, you know, that's really out of my realm of knowing those numbers.
But they can get that information by contacting Medicare. Can they do that, Yolanda, like so many of the other things you have now implemented? Can they do that online, put in an inquiry and say that, you know, what if this situation arises? How much am I covered? That way they can know that what their risks are. And then in many cases, a lot of times this arises because something actually happens.
Yes, and you can go to medicare.gov, medicare.gov. Also, their 1-800 number, 633-4227. They're very, very helpful in giving you the information about, you know, how long-term a care would affect you if you don't have insurance, what you can do to have that protection.
Yolanda, let's talk about prescription drug coverage, because we've seen as we age individuals, you know, whether it's adult onset diabetes, whether it's blood pressure or, let's say, medication for cholesterol, statin drug, arthritis, you know, as people age and their health lessens to some extent, they become older, they begin to start taking a lot more medication. And as we know, depending on the drug, those medication or those drugs can become quite expensive.
Oh, Jim, I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because that is probably the highlight of understanding the drug prescription plan. And it's really knowing that right now, you know, you just retire, you're 65, you're in good health, and you don't want to buy this extra Medicare Part D, because there is a premium to that insurance as well. The premiums in San Diego County can range between $14 a month to maybe $47 a month, okay? And that's on top of your Medicare Part D premium. So I advise this to everyone. If you really don't need a full coverage of prescriptions at the moment, buy the most inexpensive plan, the one that's going to cost you maybe $14 a month. So right now, basically, you have a drug prescription, but it's not giving you like this dynamic coverage on your prescriptions. So later on in years, when you do need maybe more medication, you can switch over to a different plan. Now, the reason I'm saying this is because if you don't take Medicare, the Part D, at 65, there is also a penalty down the road if you didn't take it when you were 65. So let's say you're 72, now you need a lot of medication, and you wanted to sign up for the Part D, the drug prescription plan, it also would cost 10% more per year.
And so there are various steps, but one of the things that you have done, and I'm really glad to see that you've done this, is you've really updated your website. And let's begin with, I'm on it right now.
Okay.
And I've hit the tab called Medicare.
Uh-huh.
And right over to the right, you've got Medicare publications, get extra help with Medicare prescription drug plan costs,
uh-huh,
Medicare information for beneficiaries, and understanding Medicare enrollment periods. Let's begin with that, because you just mentioned, rather than waiting in line, you should apply for Medicare 3 months before hitting age 65 if you're retired, mm-hmm, do not have medical coverage. Let's talk about this Medicare enrollment period, because this is a great piece of information. It's got everything you need right there.
It is. So general enrollment is, you apply 3 months before you become 65, apply online for Medicare. If you don't need to apply for Medicare because, let's say, you're still working, you're going to continue working, or your spouse is working and they have you covered under their plan, and you don't want to sign up now, you'll sign up in the future, and that's called the special enrollment period. So for special enrollment period, that's when you have to bring us a letter from your employer that you had this health insurance through their work, so we can put you onto the Medicare without a penalty. And then if you miss that special enrollment period, and let's say you sort of dropped the ball and a year went by, you can now only apply during the general enrollment, which is January through March, and then it becomes effective July of that year. So it's initial enrollment when you become 65, special enrollment, you want to do it at whatever time you or your spouse retires and you've been covered, and then the general, which is, you know, after the fact, you're wanting to sign up for Medicare.
If you were to summarize, Yolanda, one of the best pieces of advice that you can give to individuals, I would think at the top of the list is, number one, they should go to the website. And let's give out that website if we could as we talk about this.
www.socialsecurity.gov for government. As of Monday, what I wanted to share, we have some outstanding information for the public, and it's called mysocialsecurity.gov, and it's also, you can find it under right under socialsecurity.gov. But what it does for you, it gives you, if you're receiving Social Security benefits, it could verify your monthly amount. It also, payment history, if you're not receiving Social Security yet. And Jim, do you remember the statement Social Security used to send?
Sure.
3 months before your birthday?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, we don't send that anymore. We stopped sending it back in 2010, but now you can get it online as of Monday. You do have to authenticate yourself on this website, you know, basically answer all these questions. And we go through a lot of security. But now you can get the statement online, and it'll tell you, you know, what Social Security has for you. It'll tell you how much Medicare you paid up until now, you know, how many years in Medicare you've been paying and what all your protection is. That's a great place to go. Anything you want to know about your specific Social Security, what years have you been paid? In fact, yesterday I had a gentleman who discovered that 2007 had not been credited to his account. And, you know, he discovered it because he went online and looked at My Social Security. All he's going to do now is come to Social Security with his W-2. We'll give him the credit. It'll take us less than 30 days to update that information through the system. Had he not caught that on time, that would have reduced his monthly benefit for the future.
And Yolanda, you know, in addition to going to your site on My Social Security, signing in, finding out all your benefits, you also have some tools, because there are a lot of important decisions that retirees face. Should one spouse continue to work and postpone receiving Social Security until they reach their full retirement age, or would they be better off money-wise for both to take it early? Those are the kind of decisions that play and are a major factor in terms of Social Security benefits. Let's talk about that in the tools that are available.
Well, one of my favorites, since we're talking about information about married individuals, we have a publication that's called What Every Woman Should Know. And I'll tell you, anybody that's listening should probably do their homework, because if you're thinking about maximizing your benefits, it's page 13 and 14. You can decide, if you're married, well, who should take their Social Security benefits now? You know, should the spouse take it versus the husband, especially if they're both age 66, which is full retirement? Some individuals can do this. Let's say, for example, my husband was 66 and I'm 66. He wants to continue working. This is what he tells me. He's going to work till the day he dies. He's always saying that. So if he's going to work up until 70, what we could technically do is, I'm going to start my Social Security at age 66. He can get 50% of my benefits and he not touch his, because at 70, he's now going to get that extra 8% more that Social Security pays for delaying your benefits after full retirement. So if I get $1,000 from Social Security, that's my 100%, I will get $1,000. My husband can, because he's 66, can also get something from me, so he will get 50%, which is $500. The household gets $1,500 a month from Social Security. He's still working, you know, making $100,000 at his job. When he becomes 70, he switches over to his record and gets, you know, 132% and stops, of course, the portion that he was getting under my benefit. And this is ways that people can find out of maximizing their benefits. There's a lot of folks that didn't know they could do that. Or filing on a previous spouse. If you had a 10-year marriage duration, you're now unmarried or you remarried after 60, you can go and check and see if that previous spouse had a higher benefit, and you can qualify for benefits under their record. And the same thing, if you never worked and paid into Social Security, but you were married to someone that did, you can file for Medicare under their record as well.
I'm glad that you're bringing this up, Yolanda, because I had a situation with a client whose husband was the main breadwinner. She only went to work later on in her life as the kids moved out. And so the husband was the main breadwinner, and he has the larger Social Security. And she's a couple years younger. She hasn't applied for her Social Security. And she was getting ready to start applying for Social Security, and then she came in to see me. Her husband is gravely ill right now, and I told her she would be better off taking her husband's Social Security should the inevitable happen and he passes on, because it's so much larger than hers. Let's talk about that, because that's a mistake I see often made with a lot of surviving spouses.
Oh, that they take their own instead of the widow's portion?
Yeah.
Well, that's true, because a widow at 60 is eligible for benefits like the rest of us. At 62 would be the earliest under retirement. A widow at 60, unless they're disabled, they can also get it at 50. But a widow can take either hers or his, the deceased. And you're going to sort of gauge which is the best benefit for you, because the reason some widows take it at 60 on their deceased husband is because they know if they're taking that percentage, which is 71% of whatever he was entitled, at 66, if theirs grows to 100%, then they can switch over. She could switch over to her own record. Maybe that would be one reason why a widow would do that. But you need to let, you know, Social Security know, I would like to do the numbers as to what would be the best benefit to take at what age. And when you were talking about tools, we have that on our system that it could help you decide, you know, which is best for you to take in deciding when you're filing and what the break-even point will be, depending on what benefit you take.
Well, listen, Yolanda, if you were to, as we close here, to give some advice, I would say probably the best advice that you would want to give is make yourself available to the Social Security website, because there's so much information on whether, you know, what your Social Security benefits are going to be when you get ready to retire, let's say at full retirement age or early retirement. Also, you can apply for Social Security benefits online, and likewise with Medicare, become familiar with it. And not only that, if you do have to sign up for Medicare, how much easier is it to go online and do it rather than trying to make an appointment, stand in line? So what you say as we close, probably the best thing they can do is go to the Social Security website.
Absolutely. www.socialsecurity.gov. Like most of the people that may be listening, they have a financial advisor, because, you know, you're planning for your future. Social Security is not enough to live on. So, you know, you get yourself a financial advisor, and that's very, very helpful. But to be even more helpful is, as you're suggesting, Jim, go to the website, because, you know, not everybody's pretty savvy about what's going on with Social Security. But when you start reading all this information, if you could spend 1 hour of your time, period, looking at our website, you will find out that you probably just made the most tremendous investment in your future. And for another thing to keep people abreast of what's going on with Social Security, you know, just receive updates by email. Come in, sign up for your updates by email. You will know what's happening with Social Security. You know, what's happening in the year 2033? Is it true that Social Security will only be paying 75 cents on the dollar? I mean, that was true as of May of last year. But that's information that we want to know. You know, what's the solvency of Social Security? We have excellent webinars. You want to get a one-on-one education about how to file for Social Security, what's in my best interest. So all of this, like I said, 1 hour of your time, you will see what a difference it makes in knowing what we can do for you.
All right. Give out that website one more time as we close, Yolanda.
Well, thank you. It's www.socialsecurity.gov, which is for government. And the caution to everyone listening is when you sign into our website, make sure it's a government site. You know, sometimes you just erroneously put Social Security and you might get a com, not even our website. So be cautious. If anybody calls you, anybody sends you emails and they say, this is Social Security, we're offering your cost of living or information about Medicare, but we need to verify your Social Security number, we're not going to do that. Social Security would never ask you for your Social Security number. So again, you know, be really aware that your Social Security number is a big deal and you need to safeguard it just like we safeguard your Social Security number.
All right. Well, listen, Yolanda, I really appreciate you coming on the program and keeping our listeners abreast of the things that they need to make available of themselves. Once again, if you'd like to find out more about either your Social Security benefits or Medicare, you can do so by going to socialsecurity.gov. That's G-O-V. And as Yolanda just said, make sure after Social Security, it says G-O-V. Yolanda, thanks so much for joining us on the Financial Sense NewsHour. Appreciate it. And I hope you'll come back and talk to our listeners again.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Jim. You have a good day.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense NewsHour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.